Welcome to episode 7 of Black Girl in CLE. As always, I am your host, Shayna Black, and today my guest is local entertainer and drag queen, Luca Blackheel, aka the fierce Kimmy Cartaja. We're talking about everything from acting to upcoming projects and why support and representation matters to our local POC queens. So stick around, we'll meet Luca right after this. Welcome everybody. Today I am super excited to have Luca Black, fabulous Cleveland entertainer here. First of all, he's just fabulous because his last name is Black and I am Shayna Black, of course. And so we're not related.
No, I promise.
Well, I mean, we are, who knows? Yeah, who knows? You never know.
You're just my cousin.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, this isn't a nepotism show. Like, I gotta go with my family pool and find you.
Hashtag ancestry.com.
Yeah, we'll find out later. But you were actually recommended by Bella Sen.
Good old Bella.
Who was a past guest and forever friend of Black Girl and CLE.
Yes.
So we're going to do this episode just a little differently. Luca and I have been chatting and just meeting each other. And we could have probably done like a 3-episode podcast in this small amount of time.
Yes.
We've been working through life issues and love and business advice. So
mental illness, all the fun stuff.
Mental illness and all that. And so we're going to see what's left to talk about.
Yeah.
But like I said, Luca's an entertainer here, multidimensional. And I'm just going to let Luca introduce himself.
Yeah. Hello. Hi, my name is Luca Black. I'm 22 years old. I'm a child. And I am born in Jamaica, born in Kingston. And then I came up here off the boat, fresh off the boat, to good old Cleveland, Ohio. And I have been theater and all that other fun stuff, theater, drag, music, writing, all that fun stuff since I was 4. Well, drag since I was like 16, but theater since I was 4. Basically, same difference.
I can tell you a story, but we'll talk about that one later. About young kids exploring drag.
Oh, I love the children drag queens. They're amazing. They're adorable. They make my heart just palpitate.
Good.
I'm like, just fix your eyelashes. But it's fine.
So tell me about your first, what was your first theater show?
Oof. I don't know why this is my first theater show. I was 4 years old. I was doing this show called Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a good experience, but not as my first show. I, mind you, 4 years old. So
you remember your role?
I was just an ensemble character, and they, mind you, 4 years old, fresh off the boat, with a full thick accent, also with a lisp. So they gave me no lines, but I sang every song, because I just need like ensemble, you know, background characters. And so, I remember doing the song called "Me Old Bamboo." And to this day, I don't know what that song is about. But I do know that they, like, put in children doing a tap number in that like, dance break. And we also had bamboo canes, like, sticks that we were dancing with as well. And anyone who knows that song is, like, it's just, like, super fast, super kitschy. And I remember opening night being very nervous and singing that song, doing this like full dance number with this stick, and I accidentally kicked it in the audience and hit this white woman in the face. I was so mortified, but it was that moment that I fell in love with theater, because
the show must go on.
Yeah, it was like, it was live, it was up front, like we had like, what, 3 or 4 more shows to go after that one. It was one of my favorite, like, things, because things can mess up. Things can just go very wrong. But it's really what you pay for, because no show is the exact same, even though, you know, you're doing it the exact same way, or, you know, it's written and all the other fun stuff. No audience experience is the exact same. And you can, like, continue to live off that audience experience. So that's one of my first and last time I've ever done Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, because I hate the musical. No shade, but it gets on my nerves. But it was a intense introduction to theater. I don't recommend it for people who are 4 years old.
So what were some other roles or shows you've been in? So we'll move past Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yes, let's move past. Let's go recent, kind of semi-recent. One of the shows that really made a mark in my artistry was Rent. I played Angel in Rent. And I remember doing Aladdin at this local theater in Cleveland, and someone saw me in Aladdin playing Jafar. That was the second time I was in Aladdin, and the first time I was doing it at my school, and I played Genie, and the second time I did it on like this super bigger stage with this actual theater company, and we did Aladdin, I played Jafar, and someone seen that and like messaged me. This was the first time, like, that was also my like introduction into like networking and stuff. And so someone messaged me, randomly got my number, and was like, yeah, so, you know, let me know about the stuff that you do, and like, you know, are you comfortable with doing this? And if you show up, you have this role. And you know, me being me, I was like, well, I still would like to audition. And so come audition day, I show up and do the audition for this show, and end up meeting a lot of the people who were going to be into the cast. And when I tell you, I have never been in a more cohesive actor setting. We did run throughs like a week before tech week, or like 2 weeks before tech week. Like, we were on together. It. Yeah. And so, you know, at the time, it was one of the shows that really opened my eyes to what theater could be. And I was the third Black person in that show.
Oh, wow.
The other one played my counterpart, and the other one played another principal role. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it was fun to like not be the only Black person on stage.
The only chocolate chip.
Exactly. You know, random chocolate chip in a hall of vanilla cake. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was just fun to see that, because that's also when I started rooting for Everybody Black.
Yes.
And because at the time, you know, theater is so, you know, Cleveland is small, Ohio is small, the theater scene is small, so everyone knows everybody.
Right.
And so it was funny because the same other two Black folks that end up getting the other two principal roles, we end up seeing each other at every audition. Single audition. And it was me, another person, like two other people. And we were at every audition together. And if one didn't get it, we knew the other one was going to get the other one. And the other one. And so, you know, we always just, it was like a little clique that we had in the community. And so that was that. And then I started really experimenting outside of theater with, you know, the theatrics and the makeup and stuff like that. And I wanted to kind of pick the brain of myself and stretch the limits of what I could do. And so I was doing some like contract stuff, mind you, at the age of like 15, 16, for these different theaters, like making wigs for them and doing makeup for like different shows and whatnot. And like different costume design stuff and whatnot. I did some makeup and hair design for Little Women at the same theater. And so I was like, well, why don't I just like do this for myself? Yeah. And then, you know, drag started.
Okay. So before we get to drag, because yes. I mean, we're going to talk a lot about drag, and I don't want to say that's why you're here, because now that I know so much about you, like, drag seems like the smallest thing that we have to talk about, but I know for the audience, it's not. You told me, you know, you say, I said you're an entertainer. You said artist.
Yes.
What other art do you do besides theater right now?
So I am currently, well, right now at this moment, I am a singer, songwriter. I've been ghostwriting for years. Gypsy's Christmas, wow. I've been ghostwriting since I was 13. And for like local bands and different things like that. My mom I'm also a dancer, a choreographer, and I am teaching some stuff at the Moving Factory soon. But my mom always kept me in everything. basically. You know, ADHD kid can mm-hmm. do things. But yeah, so, and I'm currently, you know, choreographing. I teach dance and music techniques to different, like, theaters on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
They don't nice. Like to keep me on for that long. And yeah, and I'm also writing a show right now, good old mini series, Everybody Black, full POC LGBT pro mini series called Colors of Him.
Tell us about that.
Ooh. It's a I'm Issa Rang, my own project, so I'm playing the lead and also writing it. But it follows the story of three characters: Ezra, who I play, Dainey, and Ran. And they all have separate arcs. Ezra's arc is trying to figure out how he lands as a African American LGBT queer person in the city of Ohio, or city of Cleveland, and trying to really figure out where his niche is. I got that story, obviously all of these stories are based on some loosely based on my life, and so there was a moment in the scene when I started trying to figure out what I was and who I was, and how I wanted to identify. I started to notice the underlyings of colorism and racism and all the other fun stuff that no one really speaks of out loud. And I started trying to figure out why the culture that I am in, the LGBT culture, is denouncing African-American people and people of color and, you know, the Latino trans communities and all the other fun stuff, when it was us that really, like, forced that. Yeah, we put that into action. We gave, you know, like, not to jump ahead and speak about drag, but, you know, the type of dance that I do, the type of dance that I teach, is voguing. And so, you know, without the African-American community pushing that ahead, you would not have drag queens. You would not have the ballroom scene. You would not have the good old 80s and 90s club kids. Like, these mm-hmm. would not be a thing. And so I really wanted to write about that and speak about that, because not a lot of people know where that comes from. And not a lot of people see what it looks like when you are being denounced by the people.
Your own
that,
people.
Yeah, your own people, like your own community, especially outside of being Black.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to write about that. And so that's that arc. And also it's just, you know, an unconventional love story between Ezra and his lover, too. And then Dainey, who is another character, part of the friend group, she is in a relationship. She is the most unstable character. She is loosely written about my friend Aisha.
I was wondering if you were gonna say
yeah, that's exactly what she's but she is one of the most craziest characters, but she has the most stable relationship. And with that being said, she is her lover Luna is all about her African-American roots, all about her, you know, heritage. And Dainey's question is why does everything have to be Black? I don't know why I feel bad being turned off by this. I don't know why I don't want her now. And she knows she feels bad. She feels wrong about, like, it just feels wrong to her. But there's this scene, it's called Sex with My Ancestors, and it is the scene with Dainey and Luna. You know, they're like going out and making out, watching TV and whatnot, and Dainey cuts it short, and it's because she's looking at Luna's, you know, living room, and she's like, there's a picture for Yakalo up on the wall, and, you know, there's a good old, like, MLK, like, bobblehead statue or whatever, and I don't like that watching me while I'm doing this, you know what I mean? Like, she felt really guilty, and, you know, it's playing on that, like,
I can't do this,
and it's not because I don't like you, it's because something about, you know, the way you express yourself and the way you express your heritage is off-putting to me. And it's because she doesn't know who she is at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I always want to bring that to light because a lot of people don't, you know, mm-hmm. that's a thing that happens. Mm-hmm. And then Ran is more, who is also part of Fun Group, he's more on the nose as far as the male that I see every day. Okay. Someone who has that sense of lack of understanding of the mental illness and what that means in the African-American community. And also with his own toxic masculinity and addictive behavior to drugs, sex, and other addictions as far as just what he needs on an everyday basis. Mm-hmm. And where what he can do to get off, whether it is, you know, drugs. He just needs, he has that, yes, he has that need of self-medication, whether it's, you know, positive or negative. Mm-hmm. It's that
to ease the pain, yeah, or whatever that is.
Yeah. And then you have Tooth, who is not a part of the friend group, but is Ezra's love interest. Okay. And he goes through a hell of an arc trying to live up to his father's expectations and really trying to figure out, obviously, life, but why his attraction and love to Ezra is so prevalent. What makes it interesting is that Tooth and Ezra do not speak until the second episode. Oh, excuse me, the first episode of season two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they do not, like, physically hook up or get together until the last episode of season one. And so...
Wait. The last episode of season one, mm-hmm. they hook up, but they don't mm-hmm. speak till season two?
Exactly.
Okay, just want to make sure I heard
so,
that right.
And so it's that they have this... It's a love story. It's like an unconventional love story. And so they have this attraction. They meet each other in episode one. And when I say meet, I mean like very loosely. Like there's a whole shootout and everything happens. But
a real shootout?
No, not a real shootout. Okay. I mean, yes, but it's staged. So, no.
I mean, yes.
Yes, it's a, you know, real shootout. Someone dies and, you know, all the things. But they're like magnets that don't go together. And so they continuously revolve around each other and are living in this push and pull gravity situation. And they don't physically get together until their last arc. Ezra decides to go back on his meds at the end of, you know, not to get too much away, but you have to see it to, like, you know, actually get into it. But yeah, they just collide into each other finally. And they finally make that, like, moment of this is who I am, this is who you are, and I like, there is moments in this show where Tooth is following Ezra and at 3 a.m. because Ezra likes to take these breaks like I do in my real life. Mm-hmm. He like goes out like 3 a.m, like walks around like his own neighborhood or whatever, and Tooth is following him and he thinks that he's going to, you know, be hurt by him.
Right.
And so Tooth ends up pushing Ezra against the wall in like the middle of the night, and they're like sharing this weirdly passionate breathing moment where they're like super in sync, and then like Tooth gets a phone call and like ducks off, and Ezra's like, I don't know what the fuck happened, and I don't know if this person is trying to kill me, but I don't feel threatened. Like, though, like, you know, if he's trying to kill you is like a thing that you have to think about in your brain, but
at 3 a.m. exactly, walking the streets,
exactly, but this is not the first time that happened to him. And so he's like, I feel protected in a way. Okay. I feel like this is a, you know, and so I wanted to bring that sense of fantasy to the sense of what really goes, you know, the sense of, you know, the brutal honesty of what a African-American, you know, young African-American, you know, adults have to go through on an everyday basis, and bring that sense of fantasy out. A lot of this is loosely based on my life, yes, but I take a lot of inspiration from Noah's Ark. I don't know if you know Noah's Ark, but yeah, so Noah's Ark really inspired me when I was really younger to start writing.
Someone's about to re-air that, right? I just heard
that. I heard that as well, but I don't know if that's the truth. They did release season one and season two on YouTube, like the full, all of the episodes, and I've been living my best life. but yeah, so, you know, I remember watching that, and Noah, who is the lead character, he's also a struggling gay screenwriter. And so, you know, it's really that inspiration. I wanted to write this because I wanted to see, obviously, more of myself on the screen, more of the people who look like me. But I also, yes, but I also wanted to see some of the stories that do not get told. I'm tired of watching Empire and watching Power and watching all of these things of, like, you know, the not necessarily negative, but these are stories that have been said and told before. Mm-hmm. You've seen them in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And I, although, you know, this may seem like something that's been done before, I want to take it as a different perspective, because I feel like perspective brings new, fresh eyes and air to any project.
So, where are you in the stage of this? Are you still writing? Has it been filmed?
Yeah, we are currently... Oh, here's the thing. With what I said earlier about doing theater and being the only Black kid, it has put a damping towel on the African-American community as far as, like, theater stuff is concerned. And so, you know, when we don't see representation, we don't have a lot to go on. Right. And we have that lack of trust. And so if it's not Karamu, sis, like, you know, we're not trying to audition for it, mm-hmm. because, you know, maybe... they have the right mind to do it, or they have the warm heart and the warm spirit to want to do these things, but it's obviously not gonna... That's how you get shows like West Side Story, where I am and another person are the only two Black people in that whole show. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they want to do these things, but your report card has been so poor, right. with, you know, not necessarily catering, but just showing up and showing out for the culture, and so we don't necessarily trust. And so... I'm still in the writing stage. We are doing, like, some pre-production stuff, but we still have to cast these couple other characters. When I say everybody Black, I mean everybody Black. Like, from the, you know, cameramans and the people on set and the actors and the other writers that, and the director, because I'm not going to be directing this myself. I'm going to drive myself crazy. But, you know, the people for it, I would like everyone Black first, because that's how you, with a story like this, it can only be handled by mm-hmm. the African-American culture, because, one, it's for the culture, and two, you need those eyes to be like, yes, sis.
Yes.
I see you. I understand you. I hear you. This is valid. And here's where we can take this. And here's what we can do with it. And here's my two cents. And here's blah, blah, blah. And so, And so we're currently in some type of pre-production, but we're still looking for some key characters. Actually, Tooth. We're looking for a Tooth. We're looking for a Jamel. We're looking for a couple of other characters to fill in the spot. And so I want it to be a fully, you know, I'm also looking for grant money. Give me monies. But I'm also, you know, doing a lot of outreach, because I noticed that you can go on all these sites and be like, I'm looking for blah, 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 blah. But you have to reach into the community, and you have to actively, you can't just say like, oh, we tried everything we did.
Couldn't find anyone.
No. Like, you have to physically go out there, and whether, you know, this gets done this year or next year or whatever, I know what I want, and I'm going to get it no matter what. Because I just can't give up.
Right.
I can't. It's important. Exactly. It's, you know, and I mean, whether if this goes anywhere, if we get, you know, a lot of monies, or we end up on Netflix or the Hulus or whatever the world's, or if it fails, you know, I know that I have done my job by showing and implementing and creating the things that I would like to see, and the stories that I would want. And no one can tell me that I didn't do my part.
So, talking to a lot of creatives, and you kind of touched base on mental health in that mm-hmm. space, and I realized that a lot of artist types and creatives, and they have mental health struggles.
Oof, yes, they do.
You know, I won't say you have issues, because we don't have, everybody got issues, but mm-hmm. it's struggles, and there's bouts. It's not always there. What's in your self-care kit? What brings you out, or when you have those hard moments?
Oh my God. Good question. I like, I talk to myself a lot. Okay. And I have to continue to reassure myself that this is physically normal. This is a thing that I'm going to have to go through all of my life. And you know, with mental illness, we do this thing where we wear a blanket, this wet blanket over ourselves, and we make things seem darker than it actually is. And so I have to realize that my life was exactly the same it was last week when I had 25 cents in my bank account to this week when I had 25 cents in my bank account. What changed? My perspective. When I had 25 cents in my bank account last week, I knew that it was because I paid that something off. I knew it was because I did what I needed to do, or, you know, there was just something that, you know, it was an action behind it. This week, I am sad about that because I could have used that to do, you know, right. What I mean? And so I have to really kind of psych myself up to get into a routine every day, and to have some type of stability, because, you know, when you're a struggling artist, especially when you're Black, you know, you get those doubts of, I don't know how many people are going to show up. I don't know what that, you know, door money is going to look like. I don't know how that bar sale is going to do. I don't know what's going to blah, blah, blah. And it's all of these things that I feel like I'm not doing enough about. And like, all of these things are just happening at that moment. And so you need some type of stability there. Especially if you're, you know, doing independent contracting and you're here and you're there and nothing is consistent and your money's not consistent and whatever, something has to be consistent. And I know with me, the way I brush my teeth has to be the same every day. Okay. The way I take a bath has to be the same every day, the same soap. And it may seem OCD, but it's something that stables me.
It's a comfort.
It's a comfort. It's something that I can go home and be like, I know when I go home at the end of the night, everything can be the shit. Everything can, you know, like, be torn down and crazy. But I know when I go home, face mask, wash and brush my teeth, wash myself, watch. I like to watch battle rap.
Okay.
That's a thing. It's so random. I know it's so random. But I watch Queen of the Ring, and, like, it's a bunch of female battle. It's great. I don't know why. Like, I love lyricism. It's great to me. But anyways, I watch that like while I'm in the bathtub, and then I listen to indie music. I write a little bit, go to bed, done. I know, and anything added more or added to, it's okay because I have my set plan of what I'm going to do, and that stability continues to help me and continues to breathe new light into me because, you know, this artist life is hard and it's no joke. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, you know, starve off of it. I know that. Know that life. But yeah, so, yeah, that stability is what I keep in my my good old box.
Good, yeah. You know, I just think about everyone has or should have, I call it like you're in case of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start that spiral or you start that, like, I have 25 cents. And you know that you had 25 cents last week.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, that 25 cents is scarier.
Yeah.
And then, just by being the artist, we get the feedback. Because everyone wants to critique your art.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you... And sometimes you ask for the critique because they're at your show and you want the applause. But sometimes people are just critiquing from afar.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And it's hard to just keep hearing that some days or to get up and want to continue on
or doing that yourself,
right?
Yeah, that's
right. So you're telling yourself stuff, and then you've got other people's feedback on top of it, and it's just, you know, it's important to know how to stabilize yourself,
right? I like to keep it as honest as possible with everyone around me. Like, the, you know, when people are like, you're doing great, sweetie. No, I'm not. I'm not doing my best, but I'm doing something.
Right.
There's a difference. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I could have been working today, but instead, you know, as you said earlier, got up off the floor.
Yeah.
That was my thing. Like, that is, so, like, I, you gotta meet people where you're at. Are you okay today? No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's really what I also have to keep in, like, just continue to be honest with myself and others. Because, you know, especially when you're doing art, you have to understand that this is not a game. This is very serious, especially in Cleveland.
Right.
If you want to do theater, good luck, sweetheart. Got to get a good old day job. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of theaters that don't pay. There's a lot of theaters that make you pay them.
Absolutely.
So, you know what I mean? So it's like,
script fees and all kinds of stuff.
And so, you know, I have to really continue to be honest with myself, like, this is what I can afford and this is what I'm willing to risk. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm willing to accept. Because a lot of people, you know, I don't want to say we'll try to gyp you, but a lot of, you know, entertainers and other entertainers and producers and stuff like that will try to dim your light and dim your shine, and, you know, charge you less and all the other fun stuff. You know, when Black people be like, can I get a discount? No, you cannot. You pay all that money to go see whoever,
right,
down at the, you know, Quicken Loan Center or whatnot, but you can't pay this whatever to, you know, come see me, which is, you know, obviously less than A, B, and C. Got to know your worth. Right. Know when to stop that train. Know when to, you know, cut that out. Because, I mean, you know, I can send a bunch of flyers to everyone every day, but, you know, even if I send 50 flyers out and only 3 people come to the event, I know that in, you know, in the back of my brain, that those are the people that care and want to support. Mm-hmm. And that is who I have to be honest to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone else, like, how was the event? It was great. 100 people showed up. I loved it.
Right.
You know, like, because you can't be, you can't be out here, you know. I have to constantly, like, I did an event at the Winchester, and I was worried that no one was going to show up. And I got like a good 30 people there, into the door, and it was a really, really nice show, really cohesive show. And someone was like, oh, I wish I could have come and I wish I could have done things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I had this thing a month in advance and I told you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have made time to be there.
Right.
But you didn't.
Right.
Don't make an excuse.
Right.
You just didn't want to be there.
Right.
Your time is your time and my time is my time. Right. And we spend that.
It wasn't a priority to you.
It wasn't. And that's okay. No shade. Yeah. That's no shade. Very okay. But be honest, because I'm being honest to you about my artistry, and if you didn't want to see it, you didn't want to see it, and that's just it. That's it.
And you can still love me from afar.
Exactly.
I mean, I have friends that say that about our events. I've been meaning to come to one of your events. Well, I've put this event on 8 times.
Exactly.
And I've done it during the week, I've done it weekends, I've done it, and you haven't made it, or, well, now it's sold out, can I still come? I had tickets on sale for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
And
share button ain't nothing but a push.
Right, and you could have, at that point, chimed in, or, you know.
Exactly.
And so I think for me, on just the artistry part or people supporting the art, there is a unique, and it's almost kind of a word to our listeners, that I just want people to have the empathy to realize that everyone's not living the same life,
right?
And so the idea that, you know, that one ticket sale might be the only $10 I get that day.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, I can just go to work and this is my side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Or people say, why don't you just get a job? Because the art takes so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're on the, or just time to do.
Yeah.
And that's my soapbox speech, which we'll get away from because that's not what we're here for. But thank you for sharing your self-care kit and stability. So let's talk and let's make that pivot to drag.
Uh-oh.
I was trying to see if that's the direction I really wanted to go. If I had anything else, because we can talk the whole show about everything.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, we probably spent already an hour talking before we started this.
Yes, we did.
So, you said you started drag at 16.
Yeah, loosely. We're going to say that.
Okay. How'd you get there?
Yeah, it's a lot of theater foolishness. I started, you know, taking home the wigs and stuff from the different shows that I would do and recreate them. Before that time, I was spending my days in school drawing this character. Didn't know what I wanted to call her. I just knew she was a superhero spy.
Nice.
And she wore all black. She was like a dominatrix. It was just a whole thing. It was a whole backstory. But I wanted to make her into a comic. And that was along the time where I was writing the first ever adaptation of Colors of Him, which was called How to Save a Life. And so I was doing both of those back to back to back. And then I stopped with How to Save a Life because my mom found my journals.
Oh.
Yeah. So I just went to drawing and painting and stuff, and it just, she just kept coming into my brain, and I had to give her a name.
Right.
And so I don't know how, but I settled on the name Kimmy, or it was, her name was Kimbella first, and then I settled on the name Kimmy, and I continued to draw her, and, you know, the theater stuff was started happening, so I started taking home wigs and stuff, and so I started to style them like how I drew her hair. Mm-hmm. And it was always one side, like one side shaven off, and all the hair like coiffed to the gods on the other side. And like one super snatched brow, and yeah, just like super strong, independent Black woman. I just drew from what I knew. Like, all of my aunts and my, including my mom, were just like these, even my grandmother were just like these big, exuberant, like, you know, super smart, quick on their toes, you know, Jamaican women. And I knew that that's who I wanted Kimmy to be. Being the effervescent child that I was, I was called a lot of very derogatory names. And I decided to take that, and I put all of those names, a couple of them, a good five, into Google Translate, and I just kept ciphering them over and over again. And I landed on the name Katarzyna. And Kimmy Katarzyna, like, stemmed out of that. And then I was like, that's her name. I'm going to draw her from now on. And then after a show, after Rent, actually, after I did Rent, I started playing with more makeup, and I was like, well, why don't I just put her on my face and see how that looks? And yeah, I started like doing some Halloween stuff and going out as her. I remember doing Rocky Horror, the one they do in Up in the Heights, mm-hmm. And going out to that, you know, as like my drag character as mm-hmm. Frankenfurter, and mm-hmm. just doing like a couple of the, you know, experimental stuff.
Kim as Frankenfurter?
Yeah. So like, wow. Kimmy as, yeah, Kimmy as Frankenfurter. So it was like a lot.
So Luca as Kimmy as Frankenfurter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. And so, yeah, it was a lot. And so I did my first, I was very inspired by the stuff that I would watch on TV, because I like to say I was raised by a television. A lot of, you know, my mom and stuff, they weren't really there. Like, my family wasn't really there as far as, like, they were all dealing with, like, personal problems and just, mm-hmm. like, family stuff. And so I was kind of, like, tracked by the wayside. Also, I wasn't the beautiful kid. I wasn't the light skin that everyone was, you know, in my family. I was always, like, he's gonna be okay on his own. Let him live. Like, let him survive. He's got this. He's gonna struggle. It's gonna be fine. He got this. Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing that ever since. And so, you know, learning about, you know, love, life, happiness, sex, and all that other fun stuff was just straight from MTV, straight from VH1, wow. straight from all that stuff. And so I remember my mom got a good old dish and stumbled on this channel called Logo. Started watching, you know, One Girl, Five Gays, Noah's Ark, all the other fun stuff. And I was hooked ever since. And so I remember the first season of RuPaul's Drag Race came out. And I immediately was like, that. Everybody Black. I did not know there were Black queens. Also, Akasha from that season mm-hmm. is from Ohio. Mm-hmm. Did not know that at all. And so I just started getting into the world of accepting my femininity okay. and accepting the gorgeousness that is being hyper-femme, and understanding that that doesn't take away from my masculinity, and understanding what I can contribute to the community a lot more, especially for people who look like me. I did my first drag show when I was 20. I was at Bounce. It was literally like 2 weeks before it closed, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I did the open stage night.
Close the house
like,
down.
Yeah, listen, I like to say I gave the plague. So that's not the first place that I've like performed there that like closed down the week later. But yeah, so that was my first performance. I was very nervous. I did not look like, seeing pictures of me back then, mind you, it's been like a year and a couple of months for me doing drag. And so I remember going there, and I knew my song, I knew what I wanted to do, I knew my marks, and then I blanked. Totally. And as soon as I heard that music, I was like, all of that Mark stuff is out of the window. This is not a theater production. This is on the spot. And I went to my roots. I, you know, remember being a little tiny, you know, gay child and watching these Vogue battles and watching, you know, like ballroom stuff and learning all about, you know, the culture and the gay scene and what club kids were. And like, there are people walking around frickin' furnaces, like attached to them and like riding around a club in a bathtub. Like, that was just so inspiring and like crazy and amazing to me. And so I took from that that night, and when I say I went off, that's when they started categorizing me as the lady who flies.
Wow.
Because I like to like jump off the stage into splits, and so my tagline is, can I do a split off the stage? Nice. And so I've been doing shows ever since. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you went into voguing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the audience, what is voguing?
Voguing is a hyper-stylized art form, dance, movement piece, stemmed from the 1980s, early 80s, late 90s, club kid ballroom scene days. And it is a it started with posing.
Okay.
And it came from Vogue, the editorial magazine. Uh-huh. And it is a, you know, sequence of out posing and body contortion. It gets mistaken for whacking a lot of the times. Whacking is a hip hop art form.
Okay.
Voguing is a art form that was really, really tight and really hot in the LGBT POC community. And there are these battles that happened. And so instead of being like, I like you and I like you and let's fight about it, it was, I don't like you and I don't like you either, let's dance about it. When you got into, you know, Benny Ninja was like the first to start voguing and making that a thing. And then it just became this big sensation of Vogue battles. And then that became, you know, with voguing and battling, it became picking your own house and being in your own house and having a drag mother and having, like, you know, it's like a, it's almost like a, what did the straights call it? Football? but it's like, you know, it's like football.
Like
it's
leagues like, and stuff.
Yeah, leagues. You know, you have your different
straights
houses.
Call it football.
Yeah. So you have your, you know, your own leagues and, you know, different houses. That's what they're called. And so you do these different balls. And they have different categories like butch queen, realness, femme queen, realness, and all this other fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, and then you have, you know, the voguing battles. And so you have, you know, your butch queens, people who, are not passable, but mm-hmm. who still dress up very femininely mm-hmm. And battle, and go head to head. And then you have, you know, your hyper femme queens who are very passable, you know, super like the trans community mm-hmm. comes out and whatnot. And I got inspired to do that as, a part of my art form, mainly because I saw that the community that I was in, the LGBT community that I'm in Cleveland, does not pay any respects to where drag started, where the community started in general, and continues to forget that African-American people exist, and continue to look over, you know, what we have contributed as people over these years and what we have fought for more than anything else, which I would add to that in a moment. But I started heavily implementing voguing in everything that I do, because a lot of Black people don't even know that that's what we did. And so, you know, I like to bring it back for the culture.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, back to my my other point, with being denounced, you know, by doing voguing. A lot of people don't necessarily understand that the community that we have is very tight and is very, you know, we, you know, it's very tiny, it's very small. But when we implement certain queens, you know, and we, you know, a lot of queens that I know that are very amazing who are all Caucasian, mm-hmm. but there are also a lot of queens that I know that are amazing who are Black. Mm-hmm. And how many times do you go to a venue, twist, how many times do you go to a venue and the lineup is all Caucasian? Like, mm-hmm. all Caucasian people, all white people. Mm-hmm. And so I not only wanted to be that Black girl, that Jamaican queen who showed up and showed out, I wanted to be that Black girl, that Jamaican girl who showed up and showed out for the culture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not going to go in with a full silky wig. It's going to be all curly and coiffed.
Right.
I'm going to look like, you know, my princes and my princesses that I have grown to know in my Jamaican culture. I am not going to slim down my nose for no one. That may be yours, but it's not mine. Mm-hmm. I will not do those things. I can't wear kitten heels and, you know, and all that other fun stuff. I know, you know what I mean? Right. Like, I want to represent the heritage that I've grown up to know and love, even if it, you know, being Jamaican, even if that necessarily doesn't agree with me, mm-hmm. I know that this is always going to be a part of me, and I cannot change that.
So, you know, I just went to Drag Bingo at Music Box, mm-hmm. last week, and it was an amazing show. Mm-hmm. I didn't win bingo, so I was very upset about that. Of course,
it's fine. I didn't win
bingo. You know how bingo goes. You're always one square away from, mm-hmm. winning. Yeah. So, but what I took away from that, and based on what you said, and the importance of what you said, was that in the audience were people that came from very far. Mm-hmm. So the winner, she would always say, where are you from? And people were like, Canton, Rootstown,
yeah.
and Lorraine. And the person I was sitting with, one of my like best friends from high school, they're like, people like, we were struggling from Cleveland to get up to come out at 11 o'clock at night and to, mm-hmm. go to the flats. But these folks had come in from wherever.
Specifically for the,
right,
show.
And in drag. Some of them were in drag. But, mm-hmm. there was a younger person. And so the conversation was, they probably can't be that person in their small town. Mm-hmm. And she really, the queen really, like, was happy to see them. And before she won something, the younger queen or the aspiring queen. And she brought her on stage, and before she gave, they had a little conversation. So there were a couple queens, like, still, hey, crowd. Mm-hmm. But you could see, and I just watched, like, they had this moment of chatting and talking and whatever. And I think they had come before. So they're driving an hour or something for this one event that's happening in the flats. And so I say all that to say that by what you want to do, there are so many people that, like, there's probably a young Black queen thinking, no one looks like me. Because they, even if they go to these venues, you know, what does that look like? Do, like you said, do I have to make myself up a certain way? Make, exactly. my nose appear smaller? Do I have to show up smaller because maybe I'm tall? Exactly. You know? And so I really think that that's amazing what you're doing and a calling. And so, like, I love to see you, you know, continue on and find spaces for that because, you know, one of the LGBT is the Q. Mm-hmm. And people are still trying to find themselves.
Exactly.
And especially in our community, there's always a question of, you know, we just really are divisive on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people want to look over that line, and they don't, for whatever reason, you know. Cause,
it's, yeah, I get the, with that being said, I get the, you know, the questioning part a lot of, when I was younger, I came out as gay. And now I'm queer, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's like, my little brother, who is currently 16 now, asks me questions every day. It's just like, what, I don't understand this, but I also don't want to be like my mother.
Right. And not understand it.
Exactly. And, you know, he's young and he has a mental capacity that he wants to, you know, mm-hmm. learn. And, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, but when I was his age, there wasn't anything for me. There was no person to coach me through these, mm-hmm. things. There was no person to tell me that this is okay, or, you know, what you're feeling is not, you know, I mean, he has those times where he's like, I'm not homophobic, but, like, that made me uncomfortable, right. or whatever, whatever. And I'm like, fully understandable.
Right.
But here's the thing, A, B, and C, and blah, 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 blah. Like, when I was younger, there was a time where I was making other people uncomfortable. Not because I was being who I was, because I wasn't. Yes, I was very flamboyant and very loud and effervescent, and it was great. But there was, specifically at the school that I went to, there was this one school I went to for a very, very short time. And they all disliked me. And it wasn't because they were at all homophobic. It was because I wasn't living my true self. Mm-hmm. And they saw that. They saw I was pushing a lot harder than I needed to.
You're authentic.
You know, yeah, it was, and that's what was frustrating. And so a lot of the LGBT culture and scene gets a lot of, I feel like it's a lot of flack and a lot of pushback, especially the POC community in that community gets a lot of flack because there's a time and a place. You know, social skills. Use
right,
them.
Right.
I am never going to dim my light for anyone. But I do know that I can't wear a dress and heels in East Cleveland. Period.
Right.
I can definitely be myself. But that part of me mm-hmm. is not going to be shown there because there's a time and a place for that.
Right.
And so... I know that through, you know, with my little brother being, you know, like him, that's where exactly where he lives in East Cleveland with mm-hmm. the mom. But I know that around him is all of this, like, we don't care about the gays and their faggots, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so I continuously have to help him understand that what you're feeling is perfectly fine. It is very valid, and it's okay that you have these questions. But instead of taunting him and, you know, yelling at him and screaming at him and throwing this, you know, thing onto him, I want to better help him understand that I understand where you're coming from, but here's another perspective.
Right.
And so I feel like a lot of people get the wrong idea and or notion because they're afraid to ask mm-hmm. and they're afraid to get that answer.
Yeah. I think it's the answer more yes, so. It's not yeah, the ask.
Yeah. And so, like, even with me, like, at a younger age, like, you know, I was just very, yeah, but no one asked me that question. You know what I mean? No one asked me, like, what do you want? Right. What do you see for yourself in a couple years? Yep. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
How, like, no one talked to me. No one had that conversation with me. And so I want, and that also goes the other way, you know, that's how we deal with these children thinking it's okay, you know, with their own toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. with their own, you know, like troubles. You get these, you know, you wonder why these kids these days you know, turn to drugs and, you know, gang affiliation and whatnot, and it's because they don't have that talk mm-hmm. of, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need?
Right.
What do you see for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes both ways. And so if I can give that to him, then that can continue to be passed on. So yeah, he still doesn't understand how I glued my eyebrows down, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay. And maybe no he doesn't
one,
need to know.
No one does. No one.
Trade it's
a,
secret.
It's a secret.
So let's talk about the drag community a little bit, because we had talked and
non-existent. Sorry, continue.
That's where I'm headed. So,
okay, great.
Well, just in general. So I have heard, and you know, straight woman just trying to understand it, and for whatever reason, I ask questions and I take the answers.
Yes.
So I'm not like, oh, I didn't. Just tell me you're fine and you're fine. That just even within the LGBT community, there is some divisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So with each letter, there's a little bit of divisiveness amongst mm-hmm. the letters themselves. So, you know, the trans population may not be accepted in certain spaces and in certain yeah. smaller segments. And you know, so then the letters keep getting longer because
yeah.
of all of that. But in the drag community, especially amongst the Black queens, mm-hmm. Is there a sisterhood or is it like dog eat dog, would you say?
Well, drag is, one, political.
Okay.
Always is going to be. It's drag. With that added on, it's Cleveland. It's tiny, it's a competition. Okay. And it could be healthy if you want it to make it healthy, or it can't be. And we already have, you know, exclusively in Cleveland, not talking about Akron or Columbus, in Cleveland, it's like, what, three places that, like, regularly does shows? So, and there's a larger population of the Caucasities. So it's like, where are we gonna go? What are we gonna do?
Right.
And so there is some type of sisterhood. I mean, me and Dakota are good Judies to the day I die. But yeah, there's some type of sisterhood, but it's not as prevalent, because we're never really in the same space together.
Like, is there a Dakota call and say, hey, did you know that this is an opening, or this show was, like...
Yeah, she calls, well, and the thing is, she's like, hey, sis, you want to do this, blah, 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 and whatnot, and so, you know, I got her for a couple of my shows, like, you know, we're doing the camera review soon, she's in that, she don't know that yet.
She does now.
Hey, Dakota. But, you know, hey, see you on Instagram, girl, and, yeah, so we talk when we can, but, you know, the drag scene is so, you know, empty and non-existent now that a lot of queens go up to Columbus and Akron if they can and do the Interbelt and do Access and stuff like that. But specifically here, when's the last time you see Twist do a black, you know, a queen with, you know, have a black queen in there in general? Mm-hmm. Like, when's the last time you seen Cocktails Cleveland have an African-American full POC show other than the pageant show that they have every other time? Speaking of Cocktails Cleveland, and also the drag scene, I was to do a show there, and mind you, it was going to be my second time producing a show there, and I performed there many of times before then, with the same style of drag that I do, which is voguing, high energy, death drops, hitch kicks, all of the fun stuff. And I was blatantly told that that's just not what they wanted. And with that being said, if you don't want voguing, you just don't want me. And it was the talking about expression, and it was too expressive for the stage, and it was going to be counted as a liability. And there were these, like, countless other things that were said, that from afar, a lot of people didn't see the race in that.
Is that to the black people, you're too black? Is that what that is?
Exactly. And so a lot of people, and which, that's how I carried it. And so I was like, and I didn't say anything, you know, disrespectful. I screenshot it and put it on my Facebook, and I was like, you decide, community, you decide. And I stepped back and looked at it, and a lot of people were commenting, like, I don't see the racism in this, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, great. So he sent that to me, who was, at the time, was the only black producer at that place. Did not send that to anybody else. And they were all Caucasian.
Right.
Out of all the years that Lady J has been there, she's done a hell of other things. Like, spin someone's drink, throwing glass everywhere, like, you know, crazy shit. And excuse my language, but, like, done all that stuff, and it's me that you have a problem with?
Right.
And so, mind you, also a week later, after all of that happened, there was a queen that did a show on that stage and ended up, like, breaking a leg or something like that. Like, she messed herself up.
Oh, wow.
No one said anything to her. And so, and also the feedback that I got from the community was really great. You know, like Stonewall and Stonewall Cleveland and all that stuff was really great about that. But it's that I don't care how long your bar has been there. Right. I don't care how many years you've done for the community or whatever. I know that my morals stay intact. Mm-hmm. On top of that, speaking of, you know, the drag community within itself and you know, what we have to go on, those tips mean everything to us. Mm-hmm. Specifically at that place, you give us $150 for a show. Great. That $50 goes straight to the DJ for that show. Or the person who just presses play. Basically.
Right.
So now you only have $100. You have to have a minimum of five people in that cast including and or not including yourself. Mm-hmm. How are they not going to get paid?
Right.
It's right. Not even. Are you going to get paid?
Right.
That's the question. You have to make your own flyer, your own costume. You have to promote your own event. And at the time, they didn't promote any of the events. There was no contract to go with that. Everything was being paid under the table. You're bringing people into this bar. You're doing shows weekly. You're, like, pumping this shit out. And you're not getting anything in return but a headache and a heart attack.
Exposure.
Exactly. And what and the people that usually go to that bar, a lot of them are, you know, regulars. There's a lot of, you know, I mean, and when I say, like, drag queens, especially there, risk their life. They do. The amount of times that I've walked out of, you know, many bars in general and walked, you know, walked home or whatnot and been, like, hit on and, like, harassed and sexually harassed at that bar and other bars and other places, not just there, have been insane. Mm-hmm. And so, especially to the African-American, mm-hmm. you know, trans mm-hmm. community and our drag queens. And so, you know, we kind of have to sit together, but it's really hard because not a lot of venues are open for...
Right.
drag shows in general, including POC drag shows. And I was talking to a friend some time ago, and she asked me, she said, does a POC drag show still exist? Is that something that people are going to come out for? Is it, because you want it to be for the culture.
Right.
But is the culture going to show up?
Right.
And... that's really why I do what I do on that stage, because we here, we're screaming, like, you know, we're doing these things. And so, you know, with that being said, with all the underlying racism and colorism and things that are going on inside the community, it's even harder now to stick together as a mm-hmm. as one. Mm-hmm. It's even harder to, you know, breathe in this community, and be Black in this community, mm-hmm. let alone do drag in right. this community.
I think, you know, I had a conversation with one of my former writers. It was about the time of the first Pride in the CLE, when we mm-hmm. still had two Pride shows, mm-hmm. so, like, the straight person that knows that random fact. And I was going, mm-hmm. and they were like, well, I don't know, and whatever, and there was a hesitancy. And so my point was, number one, I'm going to write. And I knew the people putting it together, and the people putting it together were early supporters of Black Girl and CLE. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that I've always enjoyed, right? It's like, that's the random fact of Black Girl and CLE, is that the LGBT community embraced it. Like, we like that you're leaning into that. Mm-hmm. So I went, and we had this conversation, like, well, I don't know. I said, well, here's my statement. I said, you know, not necessarily understanding if I'm an ally, because I don't know what I'd do in a situation if I right. had to stand up for somebody, because you just don't know. I could say it and then, you know, be on the bus like, ooh, like, because I don't want to get yeah. off. I said, but the point is this. I said, as African-Americans, we know discrimination. We know the sting of that. We know the look that goes with that when people see you and, oh, we're not hiring. Mm-hmm. We know what that feels like. I said, so who am I to, like, discriminate against somebody else? You know, right. Black or white, to be like, oh, well, you're gay. Sorry, you're not, you know, because exactly. then we're doing the same thing that we don't like.
Exactly.
And the colorism. And so for all those people that, I mean, are bare bones, that's my argument. So it's not about, well, God said in the Bible, like, I don't care. It's be nice to everyone.
Right.
And I know what that feels like to get passed over. Was that racist or was that a racial mm-hmm. remark or that kind of stung a little bit?
Right.
So who am I to give that sting?
Right.
And we get so caught in that line of, we can't, you know, well, we shouldn't do that. Well, straights are this or straights are mm-hmm. that. Or, you know, like you said, would Blacks come and support? I think they would.
Right.
If they know why support is important. Like, we know to show up for the culture.
Exactly.
We know to try new things for the culture. It's important because we just have to know why.
Yeah.
And then kind of debunk all the head stuff. Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They doing too much. I don't like all that stuff that we go with because we're not sure we want to lean into
right.
it, but I think we'd support it.
It also goes with, like, asking the questions, like, but on behalf of the community, knowing how to answer those questions mm-hmm. because, like, me and my mom had our differences, but we are on, like, speaking terms now. We're good at this moment, but she just was scared. Mm-hmm. She did not know. I mean, it doesn't excuse the actions, but she just did not know. Mm-hmm. And at the time, she was asking all these questions, and I had no answers.
Right.
Because I was figuring it out.
Right.
And so now, when, you know, I get the... I love it. I usually get the... especially when I'm in drag, like the... I don't want to be ignorant. But, like, mm-hmm. can I just... And I'm like, say it. Ask me.
I had some of those, too. Honestly.
Ask the questions. Because I know you're going to. Like, and... I know the curiosity is there. Mm-hmm. I know that there are a lot of people who are like, even like listening to this podcast. I don't want to listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. These sounds wrong. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
But it's asking those questions because I know that I have the mental capacity and the emotional capacity to answer them. Mm-hmm. And I know where I am in my artistry and that Kimmy Katarsha does not stop or start my artistry.
Right.
She does not define who I am, but she does define a part of me. And so I know that what I do as far as drag is concerned... maybe it is not respected in some parts of my culture, but I do know that I cannot change who I am. Mm-hmm. I can't not just say I'm done.
I'm just going to exactly. go and get a...
Yeah. Like, I'm going to get a bleaching. I'm Caucasian now. but, like, I can't do that because it's always going to be a part of me. And so, I know that it is to have the change... You have to implement the change. And with all of the drag shows that I'm doing and with all the stuff that I'm promoting and with all of the, looks and stuff that I'm putting together, I do it because I want to see more of that. Mm-hmm. When is the last time you've seen a black drag queen go on stage, do a full striptease lap dance number to Marilyn Manson while whipped cream is all over her? When's the last time you've seen that?
Hi.
Never. Like... That's what I do because it's more than doing a whip crack to, you know, a black lady screaming on a, you know, dance track or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's more than that to me. It is a sense of, you know, art. When I go to shows, yes, there's mainly white people there, but they also need to know that I show up and show out and please book me because I need monies. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, you know, it's here. And so if any child, for any art is listening to this, we are here, we see you, you're valid, be heard, make your own space. Because after that whole cocktail situation happened and a couple of other the venues, you know, were just not PLC friendly, I had to make my own way.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to just stop. Like, that was never just going to be my end game.
Right.
If I can't just talk about it. I gotta be about it. And
right.
So, you know, whether that's putting a cardboard box outside in the middle of the square and playing the little boom box and handing out my Instagram little, little card or whatever, that's what I'm gonna do.
Okay. So, first of all, and we're gonna go back to, like, our earlier conversation mm-hmm. where I'm gonna push you to mm-hmm. think and realize that cocktail situation was because you were playing small. So you were meant to do something bigger, but you never would have.
Yes, exactly.
Had that not happened. So understand, you know, in the mind shift
of that. Good old cycling back, good old circle back.
Yeah, so in the mind of that, realize that had to happen because otherwise you would have been okay being small and just being the performer and producing on their space.
Right.
Where maybe you are meant to build this larger space.
Yeah, and Also, I mean, coming back to, like, Colors of Him and stuff like that, like, that's just what my artistry is all about, is I want to inject all of the black that I can into every art form that I can, because black is beautiful, and that black love for anything is gorgeous to see. And I feel like we're in this wave and this movement now of, you know, really being about it, and... I know that it's high time more than ever to, like, get a group of, like, if you go on my Instagram or my Facebook, every other post is, like, my promo stuff, other people's promo stuff. It's, like,
that community.
Reshare. Yeah, mm-hmm. That communication. Like, I could not know you from a hole in the wall, but if you put a post up, sharing it, liking it, gotta do it. Because, you know, I know the people that follow me want to see more than black. You know what I mean? Like, they just, that's, you know, what I also want to see.
Right.
I, and, you know, not only is it for the culture, but it's just, it's for the next generation. And so I don't want my brother to sit there and stop and just be like, oh, I'm just going to take out the trash and, you know, be a trash man for the rest of my life. It's great that you want to do that, and you can definitely do that.
But you feel like you've got more.
Exactly. But, and he obviously does. So I'm like, well, that's great. But I see some other things, and I don't want to push this on you, but you got options.
Live your truth.
Yes.
And use your gift is what I always say. Use your gift. So as we wrap up, number one, how can people find you or support?
Here's my PayPal. Just like
Cash App me at
find me on Instagram, Vogue.Luke. That's it. L-U-K. I don't know how to say words today. That is Vogue.Luke. And then on Facebook, facebook.com/
Yes.
Is this a forward slash? Yeah.
Forward.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Forward
slash. You know which one it is.
/slay.Kimmy. And you'll find all of my pictures, all of my recent stuff, all of the links to everything I do if you want to be inspired by all the things. And then also all of the show dates for all of the shows that I'm doing soon. PayPal me at Luke Neschling. And I'm always down to collab, always down to do things, always, you know, looking for different ventures and things like that. If you want a daily laugh, my Instagram is the way to go. My Insta story is me being insane and crazy, because if I can't laugh, I feel like I'm doing a disservice.
Okay, two questions.
Yes.
And we didn't really get into the discussion, but I'll ask the question. Mm-hmm. So if someone sees you and meets you on the street, pronoun, does it matter? Do you have a preference?
Oh, I don't have a preference. I'm on a every pronoun basis. I do theater, so, you know, I'm using, and I also do drag, so it's like, I'm usually being called her, him, them, they, they're all the things. So I'm on a open pronoun basis, call me everything but late. And,
I mean, because you asked, because for me, like I said, the straights, sometimes we don't know what to do.
Yes.
And so we don't do.
Yes. And so they're like,
I don't know. I don't want to even get over there. There's this person that does something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and so I'm going
to. They want to talk to you, but they don't know how to approach.
That's
and
my life. That's everyday life.
That's everybody's life.
Yeah, no. If you see me on the streets, holla. I mean, don't actually holla. Don't do that. Don't be screaming. My head hurts all the time. But no, if you see me on the street, just say hello. Hi. Welcome. I'm always in the mood for a conversation. Okay. Even if it looks like I'm not in the mood for a conversation, that's just me doing my musical theater thing where I walk out my baggage, which is listening to a dance track and trying to walk at the pace of like that 8 count, like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it looks like I'm shredding. My legs are long.
Nice.
I track a lot of.
All right, final question. Mm-hmm. How can us straights, or us black straights, did I say that right?
Yes.
I've always been referred to that. The straights are, I was at a party once, and they were like, the straights are here. And so first of all, though, I had already been there. So I'm like, what do you mean the straights? I've been here the whole time. The straights
been here.
Oh, the straights.
You have been implemented.
You just don't even think about me anymore. How can we, especially African-American folks, be an ally?
Good question. For me personally, I think that it all boils down to, respect and safety, and knowing, the capacity of which you can take and which you can't. You know, when you ask certain questions like, how do you do this? And what does that mean? And blah, blah, blah. Like, be ready for the answer that you're not going to expect, you know, because everything is new. And know that every experience is different. Every person is different. And just because I am a pansexual man does not mean that I know Todrick Hall. And does that mean that I know Kingsley? And you know what I mean? Like, just know that the same discrimination that, you know, we face as African-American people is the same discrimination plus more that, you know, you face as an African-American woman,
right,
or an African-American LGBT person. And it's just, it's always that something and something and something. So right, know that every experience is very different. And you're not always going to get the same answer.
And I think the same rules apply.
Yeah, so, definitely.
As in, as a Black person, I don't speak for all Black people.
Exactly.
And we've always talked about how much we've hated that. Yep. Like, why do Black people do this? And you're mm-hmm. like, I don't know.
I don't
do it.
Are you talk white? No. No.
Right. So to say, why do all drag queens, mm-hmm. that's probably not the way to start mm-hmm. the sentence.
Exactly. Just like, I mean, it just boils down to humanity and being, and social skills, to be completely honest.
Just not being a jerk.
Just don't be a jerk. If you don't know how to word a question correctly, just let me know, like, beforehand. Like, this is going to sound very bad. Right. Like, I do that all the time. I'm like, so this is going to sound terrible, but I just want you to know that this is coming from a great place. So, you know, common decency and understanding, like, respect and a thing is, you know, that's a thing.
Cool. All right. Well, I totally enjoyed meeting you.
You as well.
And talking to you. And I hope the audience loves it. I will definitely see you at the Tees.
Yes, I will be there throwing my body off the stage.
And hopefully we'll be able to continue this conversation.
Yes.
For some folks in person.
Yes, yes.
So stick around. Again, today's guest was Luca Black, also known as Kim Kartaja. Did I say
Kimmy
that?
Kimmy
Kartaja. I was close.
Jesus Christmas.
You said don't even try it.
Don't even. A lot of people just don't. I just say Kimmy Cat and call it a day. Just Kimmy Cat, call it a day.
Kimmy Cat. Okay.
Kimmy Cat. I like it because it kind of sounds like Smelly Cat. Smelly Cat.
Oh,
smelly
Cat. So thank you for joining us, and everybody else, we'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Black Girl in CLE. Talk to you next time.